Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today we open with some major news about a criminal investigation by the Justice Department into the campaign finances of Congressman Duncan Hunter. Next up, hear about a Supreme Court case in which the justices have limited presidential appointment powers. Then we'll have information from the House Intelligence Committee's hearing held Monday, including FBI Director James Comey's startling announcement confirming an investigation into ties between Russia and the Trump campaign. We'll have an update on the confirmation hearing for Neil Gorsuch, Trump's appointee to the Supreme Court. And then we have a very important newsmaker interview today with immigration lawyer Stephen Riznick. Now, a lot of people aren't aware that if you're a visa holder or a green card holder and you leave the United States, you may not be allowed back in. Hear why on today's show and what you need to do to protect yourself from deportation if you're a green card holder or visa holder and you've ever committed a crime or even been accused of one. Learn about a bill in Congress that's alarming privacy experts because it would allow your employer to require you to submit to a DNA test. Then on Destination East County, hear about the most exciting events coming up across our region, from a Lavender Festival to Julian Gold Rush Days. And finally on sports, Liz Alper will have an update for us on a hot Helix Highlanders game. So stay tuned for all of these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. The U.S. Justice Department is conducting a criminal probe into allegations that Republican Congressman Duncan Hunter illegally used campaign finance funds for personal gain, according to a statement issued Thursday by the House Committee on Ethics chair and its ranking member. The statement indicated that the Department of Justice has asked the committee to defer its investigation into potential ethics violations, as is customary when the Justice Department has a criminal investigation underway. The committee also released a report by the Independent Office of Congressional Ethics, whose five bipartisan members voted unanimously to recommend that the House Committee on Ethics further review the allegations because there is, quote, substantial reason to believe that Representative Hunter converted campaign funds to personal use to pay expenses that were not legitimate and verifiable campaign expenditures. Those expenses included tens of thousands of dollars spent on family travel, flights, utilities, health care, school uniforms and tuition, jewelry, groceries, and more, the report states. Hunter recently voted to gut the powers of the Office of Congressional Ethics, though the House later backed off on that action following a public outcry. It is unclear why Hunter did not recuse himself from voting to weaken an entity that was currently investigating him. The Justice Department does not confirm investigations in progress. However, Times of San Diego reports that employees at a Jiffy Lube near Hunter's El Cajon office told them that multiple FBI agents visited Hunter's office on February 23rd as part of an investigation. The San Diego Union-Tribune reports that Hunter's lawyers issued this statement in response to the Ethics Committee's announcement Thursday. Last year, the statement reads, Congressman Hunter became aware of expenditure issues confronting his campaign committee. Out of an abundance of caution, he took corrective action in consultation with the FEC, and ultimately, he and his wife personally repaid the campaign approximately $60,000. The statement added that Representative Hunter intends to cooperate fully with the government on this investigation and maintains that to the extent any mistakes were made, they were strictly inadvertent. At a town hall meeting in Ramona earlier this month, when asked about his campaign finance issues, Hunter stated that he had accepted responsibility and paid back over $60,000 before the November election. He asserted that these were mistakes by his campaign, adding, I've fixed it, End of story. But the story isn't over as far as the Justice Department and FBI are concerned, apparently. Their investigations follow a series of articles published by the San Diego Union-Tribune, a Federal Elections Commission's or FEC investigation, and a complaint filed by Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, or CREW, last April. CREW Executive Director Noah Bookbinder issued a statement Thursday indicating that Hunter has shown a blatant disregard for the rules, adding, "This is the most egregious congressional spending scandal since Aaron Schock. We are glad to see the Office of Congressional Ethics voted unanimously for an investigation and will be closely following the FBI's criminal investigation of Congressman Hunter." Schock, a Republican congressman from Illinois, resigned in March 2015 amid mounting questions over his campaign finances, which similarly included lavish spending on trips and personal items using federal campaign funds. He was indicted by a federal grand jury on charges including theft of government funds, fraud, making false statements, and filing a false tax return, the Chicago Tribune reports. Schock pled not guilty to all 24 charges, and his case is set for hearing in July. If Hunter should choose to resign, as Schock did, it would trigger a special election to fill the vacancy. The last time the San Diego region saw a special election to fill a congressional vacancy was in 2006, when Brian Bilbray was elected to fill the vacancy left by the resignation of Republican Randy Duke Cunningham, who pled guilty to accepting $2.4 million in bribes. Neither the Constitution nor the House rules require a member to resign even if indicted or convicted of a crime, though if convicted, they lose chairmanships and may be censured, among other consequences, according to the Congressional Research Service. Gloria Chadwick is a nurse at the Veterans Administration and an elected member of the Grossmont Healthcare District Board. During Hunter's recent town hall meeting, she announced plans to run against him in 2018. Chadwick received over 60,000 votes in her last election, the top vote-getter in the healthcare district, which overlaps much of Hunter's 50th congressional district. After news of the criminal probe into Hunter's finances broke, Chadwick issued this statement. "Duncan Hunter Jr.'s personal greed, unethical conduct, and corruption in office make him unfit to represent us in Congress. He thinks he's above the law and doesn't have to play by the rules. As a registered nurse and 18-year elected director of the Grossmont Healthcare District, I have the character and experience to restore integrity, cure corruption, and fight for affordable health care when I replace Hunter Jr. in Congress," she said. Chadwick added, "I applaud the Office of Congressional Ethics for their unanimous vote to investigate his blatant misuse of campaign contributions and dishonorable conduct while the FBI conducts their criminal investigation of Congressman Hunter. The only cure for corruption," she concludes, "is to replace him with smart, ethical, and honest representation." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is John Fisdeer with a Capitol Report. FBI Director James Comey has confirmed that his agency is investigating alleged collusion between Russia and Donald Trump's campaign.
"I have been authorized by the Department of Justice to confirm that the FBI, as part of our counterintelligence mission, is investigating the Russian government's efforts to interfere in the 2016 presidential election. And that includes investigating the nature of any links between individuals associated with the Trump campaign and the Russian government, and whether there was any coordination between the campaign and Russia's efforts."
Comey also made clear that there is no evidence to support President Trump's claim that he was wiretapped during the campaign. Trump sent tweets before the hearing began claiming allegations of election interference by Russia was fake news pushed forward by Democrats, even though the Intelligence Committee hearing was bipartisan. There was, however, a distinct partisan difference in the tone of questions asked. Republican senators focused on how to crack down on leaks of classified information and seemed unconcerned with finding out whether Russia may have influenced the election, or if Trump operatives may have violated criminal laws. Democrats asked pointed questions on alleged actions by specific individuals, such as Michael Flynn, the National Security Director, who resigned after revelations that he lied to Vice President Mike Pence and hid secret meetings with Russia's ambassador. Last week, new disclosures revealed that Flynn was paid $35,000 by Russian Times, Russia's official propaganda outlet, an apparent violation of the Constitution's Emoluments Clause that prohibits any public official from accepting money from a foreign government or a company controlled or funded by a foreign government. Administration's officials have tried to spin Comey's testimony to suggest that no evidence of collusion has been found, but FBI policy is not to comment on findings during an investigation. The agency normally will neither confirm nor deny that an investigation is even ongoing, but in this case, obtained special permission from the Justice Department to disclose that an investigation is ongoing. Comey also confirmed that the FBI believed it was clear that Russia's aim was to prevent former Secretary of State Clinton from winning the November election, and that Russia actively sought to help Trump win the presidency.
Since 1898, more than a century ago, over 100 federal employees have served as acting agency heads while the top spot remained vacant and an appointee was awaiting Senate confirmation. But no longer. The U.S. Supreme Court has ruled this week that President Barack Obama exceeded his presidential authority when he named Lafe Solomon, General Counsel of the National Labor Relations Board, as temporary appointee to head the agency. The justices ruled 6-2 to uphold a lower court ruling and restrict presidential powers, with Justices Sonia Sotomayor and Ruth Bader Ginsburg dissenting. Under the ruling, once a president nominates someone to head up an agency, that person may not serve as the agency's acting head if the position requires Senate confirmation. The case was filed by SW General Inc., an Arizona ambulance company, challenging a ruling by the National Labor Relations Board over discontinuation of bonuses for longtime employees. The ruling will make it harder for President Donald Trump and all future presidents to fill vacancies requiring Senate confirmation by simply elevating an existing person within the agency. In recent years, stonewalling by Congress has delayed filling some top slots, meaning presidents may now be more likely to bring in outsiders as appointees. The Trump administration has been slower than most administrations to fill key posts, and many Obama-era appointees have quit or been fired, with some vacancies remaining unfilled. This makes it even more difficult to name qualified individuals to head up already short-staffed agencies. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Goetz.
This is Gene Carpenter with East County Magazine's Capitol Report. The Senate Judiciary Committee has begun confirmation hearings this week for Neil Gorsuch, Donald Trump's conservative nominee to fill the Supreme Court vacancy left by the death of Justice Antonin Scalia. But Democrats remain angered over Senate Republicans' refusal to hold hearings for President Obama's nominee, Merrick Garland, during the last year of Obama's presidency. Some believe such unprecedented obstructionism may warrant a filibuster to block Garland's confirmation. California Senator Dianne Feinstein called the current circumstances very unusual. She has stated that she plans to ask Gorsuch about including voting rights, abortion, guns, corporate money in elections, workers' safety, environmental issues, and the regulatory ability of federal agencies. Democrats are also expected to push Gorsuch on whether he would rule against the Trump administration if cases challenging the president's authority come before him on the high court. Republicans may push for Gorsuch to elaborate his views on business matters and religion. On the bench, one of the most controversial rulings was in the Hobby Lobby case, in which he ruled that an employee should be able to opt out of providing health insurance that covered birth control because of the employer's religious beliefs. Republicans currently control the House and Senate, as well as the White House. A conservative majority on the Supreme Court would take away needed checks and balances, some legal scholars caution. Gorsuch, 49, currently serves on the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals in Colorado. He has a solid record of conservative rulings and a strict constitutional interpretation similar to Scalia's. He previously served in the Justice Department during George W. Bush's presidency and will likely face grilling by senators over his role in treatment of detainees and his stance on torture. Major cases pending before the High Court in which a Gorsuch confirmation could swing the majority of the conservative side include cases involving legal protections for gay and transgender people, efforts to restrict the power of labor unions, and challenges to President Trump's travel ban on immigration and refugees.
A bill in Congress, H.R. 1313, would allow your employer to order you to undergo genetic testing and share results with the company. If you refuse, you could be fined up to $1,000 or made to pay 30% more for your health insurance. The bill is called the Preserving Employer Wellness Programs Act. It purports to help employers give early notification to employees of serious genetic conditions found through DNA testing, but opponents call it an unprecedented invasion of privacy. Currently, it is illegal for an employer to discriminate against you based on your DNA under the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act. You can't be fired or charge more for health insurance if you are found to be predisposed to a genetic condition. The new proposed law violates the spirit of existing protections and opens the door to workers losing jobs or being unable to afford health benefits based on a condition they may develop later in life. Another problem is that genetic tests are not always accurate, and the industry is largely unregulated, so a company could fire workers based on fear they will develop disabling conditions that are costly to treat, even if the test later turns out to be wrong. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ Radio, this is Rebecca Williamson.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today, my very special guest is Stephen Riznick. Stephen is an immigration lawyer with San Diego Biz Law, and we're going to be talking about some restrictions that can affect green card and visa holders. Now, a lot of people think that because of Donald Trump's revised travel ban, which exempted green card and visa holders, that if you're in one of those categories, you're safe. But there's actually a second order, presidential order, number 13768, that is resulting in a lot of people leaving the country and finding out they can't get back in. So that's going to be our topic today. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Miriam.
You're welcome. Very important issue. So can you fill our listeners in on exactly what Presidential Order 13768 means for people who are visa holders or green card holders? These are legal residents, but not citizens.
Right. Yeah, and it's interesting, as you mentioned, with the travel ban. Everybody has been focusing on the travel ban and getting shot down by 13768 that nobody seems to be aware of. What it speaks to are enforcement priorities, people that we need to get rid of sooner. And although he's got six categories of people listed, the first three are the ones that are most, common, I'd say. Having been convicted of any criminal offense is exactly the wording. Have been charged with any criminal offense where such charge has not been resolved. So that means you're charged. You haven't been convicted.
So that seems like it violates due process.
It would seem like it, but they may not have the right to due process at certain stages. And then the third one is have committed acts that constitute a chargeable criminal offense. That one's kind of in the gray area. I mean, if you've committed the acts that constitute an offense, but nobody's charged you, it's hard to see how you'd get deported. But I'm sure there are people who would report some people on certain issues if you wanted to move them out of the country.
That seems like it really opens a can of worms. Somebody who wants to get rid of their troublesome neighbor or something, or someone they don't like, could just simply make up something, couldn't they, and say, I saw this person, you know, commit a crime, and boom, they're gone just on somebody's accusation with no opportunity to defend yourself in court?
That's basically how it goes, because, you know, one of the areas that's very controversial, domestic violence charges. Now, obviously, I don't condone anything of that nature. However, you know, in my 29 years of practice, I've had a number of people say to me, well, I wasn't guilty of this, I didn't do it. And, you know, after a while, like, everybody thinks they're innocent. But I've had several cases where the person's spouse, and both male and female spouses, it goes both ways, have said to me, yeah, it wasn't true. I did it to myself because I had enough of him. I want to go to jail or whatever. Well, now, because it's so easy to get somebody charged with domestic violence in California, for example, you simply have to make a phone call. Person's in jail, and from there, they're out of here.
It doesn't just apply to serious crimes like rape or murder or even allegations of spousal abuse. This can be something as minor as somebody who's been here for many, many years and maybe shoplifted a loaf of bread long ago when they were hungry. They could be deported, or they could be not allowed back into the United States if they leave to go visit a family member. Is that correct?
That's correct, and that's where we're getting most of our phone calls. People from Canada, England, Australia, they leave, primarily because one of their elders, you know, their parents, is ill.
Yeah.
And they have no idea it's a one-way trip.
Wow. Is it just a possibility if you leave that this can happen and you can be blocked, or is this happening to everybody who leaves and has any sort of criminal record or accusation of a crime that hasn't been cleared up?
I don't think the system is technologically advanced enough to catch everybody everywhere. But certainly, if these are enforcement priorities under Section 5, then the easiest thing to do is not let them back in.
And are you actually seeing that in your practice? I know there's a lot of fear, but are you seeing actual cases of people who are being denied reentry to the U.S., who were visa holders or green card holders, and who had either committed a crime or had simply been accused of one?
Well, I'm getting a lot of calls on that. You know, most of our business is conducted by phone because we have clients worldwide and nationwide.
Yeah.
But what's happening is now officers are asking the question, have you ever committed a criminal offense? Or, you know, have you ever been charged or anything? Where before, maybe they were a little bit more, not lax is not the right word because they did their job well, but I'm stating they weren't as careful about this question. But now it basically implies if you've you know, been charged with an offense or committed one, you know, you shouldn't be let in, because if you're an enforcement priority, we want to get you out. So once we got you out, we don't have to let you back in.
So how widespread could this become? We've got spring break coming up. I'm thinking lots of students who might be going home, and if they've, you know, they've had maybe a DUI or they got in trouble spraying graffiti or doing some of the stupid things kids do. What's your advice to people who might be thinking about leaving the country on vacation or to go visit a relative, or on business for that matter?
Well, not promoting lawyers, but you should call a lawyer if you have any kind of a criminal offense or something pending, and find out if you qualify for what's called a waiver. However, a waiver takes about 8 months to get approved, which is a problem.
Yeah.
And it's a very complicated document that only 1% of immigration lawyers are qualified to create. And if you have a waiver, then you can get waived from not being able to reenter.
And do you have to apply and get the waiver before you leave the United States, or can you apply for it and then, you know, have them waive it and you get to come back?
Well,
but you're already over there.
Here's the problem. If you don't apply for it in the United States and you're already out and it's not approved,
you're stuck.
Bye-bye.
Wow.
And based on, again, it'll take about a year before we see the regulations, which are basically like the owner's manual of a law, 413768. But the way it looks now, I mean, a lot of people are going to be moved outside the country simply because they don't know it. You know, I'm getting people from Canada in tears saying, well, wait a second. I came here, I went to a convention, or I went to a meeting in Toronto or Vancouver or Edmonton, Calgary. And then all of a sudden, I couldn't get back in the country. I've got children, I've got a spouse, I've got children in school, underage children, this and that. What am I supposed to do? There is nothing we can do. We can't get them in, and they have to apply for the waiver and now wait 8 months to even see if it's approved.
Wow, so this could be terribly disruptive. I would think this could be a big problem for businesses. Is the business community complaining about this, or do they even know? I'm thinking about the high-tech companies, where a lot of them have workers who travel overseas regularly. They might be from, you know, India or China or someplace else. And how many of them might have some small blight on their record where they've been at some point accused of some sort of crime?
Well, that's the thing. And that's where it's interesting, because, you know, people do lie on their applications for employment. I've seen that even at my firm where people apply and, you know, we check backgrounds and find out. So, yes, you may see a lot of this, or you may see people all of a sudden not wanting to travel to conferences and not explaining why.
You'll be a CEO and not get back in, huh?
Well, it's very possible. In fact, even before 13768, I had this British fellow, CEO of about a $50 million company. It wasn't massive, but still, they're opening up branches globally. When he was young, he got stupid and drunk and took his clothes off in a public area and was dancing around with his beer bottle. Well, he couldn't get in even before 13768.
Wow.
And this was 20 years ago for him.
Now,
or more.
What counts as a chargeable offense? Do traffic tickets count, for example, or does it have to be, you know, something more serious than that?
Again, we don't have regulations. We don't have any help here with this.
So you're saying if you've got a speeding ticket, you could be deported?
No, but I was going to say no. It wouldn't make sense. I don't think that anything, an infraction, as we call them, wouldn't be one of those. It has to be in a penal code as a criminal offense, I would assume.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, we've been talking so far about people who are green card holders or who are visa holders leave the country and suddenly find they can't come back in because they've either committed a crime or simply been charged or accused of one, even if they've never been found guilty or had their day in court. But what if you're not leaving the country and you're in one of those categories? Do you need to worry that someone's going to come knocking on your door or find you at school or work and haul you off and deport you if you have a long ago criminal offense or criminal accusation on your record?
It becomes a yes to that question. I mean, they don't have the manpower right now to take everybody away.
So leaving and coming back, that sort of puts you onto their radar when you might not otherwise be, but it could still happen even if you don't leave.
Well, you're still correct, because there's going to be cross-checking of criminal records. It'll be a matter of time. I mean, technologically, you know, once they get it all organized, it's going to be a matter of time till they have a solid database of everybody who has a criminal record. So if they don't have a waiver, which, you know, again, I would hope that people would take this seriously enough, or a governor's pardon if they've committed a felony and time in prison.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. So if you've had a pardon, or if you've had your record expunged, or if you committed a crime when you were a minor, do those count for purposes of getting you deported?
Well, you just asked a great question. Expungement. No, expungement does not help you. And a lot of people think that it does, mistakenly. In immigration, expungements are not recognized.
Yeah, and an expungement, of course, means that you don't have to disclose the past crime. If you are applying for a job, for example, basically your record is considered to be clean. You've been essentially forgiven for having done your duty to society. I know we've even seen locally cases of police officers who got records expunged for beating somebody up or something like that. So you're saying now that if an ordinary person gets a crime, however minor, expunged off their record, no matter how many years ago it happened, they can be picked up and deported?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. Expungement has never helped and doesn't help at this stage.
How about a pardon, which of course is normally only given for more serious offenses, felonies typically.
Yeah, and that's the mixed blessing is, you're correct, is for felonies, they're hard to get. So that is a mixed blessing. They're perfect because they will actually work for immigration purposes. But they're hard to get. We have to show a certificate of rehabilitation. You can't be granted parole in finish your sentence early if it was after, I believe, 1943.
So you're giving me an idea. If somebody falls to this category, they're a green card holder, they've committed a past felony, they've done their time, they've kind of rehabilitated themselves, might it be a good idea to apply to Jerry Brown and ask him to pardon you so that you don't have to worry about being deported?
A good idea is an understatement. It's a solid idea, absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely.
How about people who committed a crime when they were minors, children?
I would assume that it wouldn't count. But again, the regulations haven't been promulgated, so we don't know. But it would be highly unlikely that somebody under 18, unless they were charged with a very serious offense and charged as an adult, that
right.
It would count.
Okay. Now, you have also told me that your clients are coming forth and advising you that out in Pacific Beach, there have been DUI stops where people are being picked up for deportation there, which is surprising to me because we've heard local law enforcement generally have said they're not really going to be cooperating with holding people and handing them over to Customs and Immigration, the reason being that they do not want to make people afraid if they're, say, undocumented or any of these other categories. They don't want them to be afraid to come forward and report a crime, for example, if it happens. Tell me what's going on in Pacific Beach from what you've heard.
I had a phone call in February, and at first, because again, I wasn't there, so I can't speak firsthand. I got a phone call one day where one of our callers, who, when I say callers, not a client, had called me and stated, what are the rules and regulations? What am I allowed to do? And I said, why are you asking? Well, I was on Garnett, a police stop, and then all of a sudden somebody was asking me for my ID as a federal agent. And he said that he could come home with me if I didn't have it on me to see if I had it. Now, this is really strange. So you're never quite sure. You get all kinds of people calling. And then somebody else called that same day within 2 hours stating that it was onto the entrance into Pacific Beach, that this had happened to them as well. So something went on because, the federal agents can't just stop and have a random police, or even if it's non-random, a sequential stop of every single person to find out if they're an alien or an American or not. But the one method we do have is a DUI stop. So you could...
Yeah, typically a DUI stop, at least when they do them out here in this county, they typically check for drug driving, but they also do license checks. So if you're found to be driving without a license or on an expired license, they can pick you up or even, in extreme cases, seize your vehicle. But now you're saying that they're using that to identify people who are subject to deportation as well, perhaps?
Well, that's what I, ascertained this day in February, and this executive order was issued on the 30th of January. So in the early enforcement days, that could have happened because I know that certain cities, including ours, have stated that, they're not going to be mixing the two because it becomes a little bit difficult of an operation from a number of controversial standpoints.
But in Pacific Beach, you had people tell you that they were actually followed home to go get their ID, their proof that they were a citizen?
They actually put it in a different way. They thought, this guy's so nice that he's giving me a chance to show him, because the person did have a green card.
Yeah, instead of just arresting me now, they're making sure I can
From one perspective, it's kind of unique. It's great customer service. But from another perspective, if he didn't have that green card, he'd probably be in handcuffs. So good thing he did.
Wow. So I guess the moral of the story on that is if you are a green card or visa holder, make sure that you have your identification handy in case you have to present it. That sounds like something out of Nazi Germany, really, but I guess that's the reality we're in right now.
Well, the biggest problem that we see, apart from shoplifting, is drunk driving. And I'm not talking about where somebody is really badly drunk and has a car accident, but, they get stopped on a check stop or...
Had one beer too many.
Correct. They make a lane change. And, of course, this is a college town. We have a lot of college kids, a lot on student visas, the F-1 visa.
Yeah.
And it's going to happen. And I would carry my, copy of my visa or a copy of my green card in my car just in case, because what can happen is you can get processed and then put in custody for the federal agents.
And I guess also be even more careful about making sure you're not drinking and driving. Maybe it's worth it to call an Uber or Lyft.
That's what I tell my clients. Yeah. I mean, seriously, with Uber around, there's no reason. If you think at all that you're going to do it, just Just get an Uber.
Yeah, exactly. You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, from the mountains to the sea. You told me about a pretty outrageous case of someone who tried to be a good Samaritan, a witness to a crime, and wound up deported because of it. Tell our listeners that story.
He was actually more than a witness. A lawyer had called me, because we also prepare immigration cases for 80 law firms, and he called me from somewhere in the Midwest, and he had told me the strangest case, and I was saddened by it. He said a police officer was being accosted by a criminal, and the criminal had control of the police officer, who happened to be alone at the time. And this gentleman, who was here illegally, passed by, and he saw the police officer getting beat up. So he didn't, you know, feel that was right, so he got out of his car, you know, thought about it, but he said, you know what, let me just get out of my car and help this guy. So he helps the police officer out, but now he's getting deported because he was here illegally.
Wow. That just seems shameful to me. That, what do we want? Do we want someone to feel like they have to stand by idly and let a police officer be injured or maybe killed by a real criminal because they're afraid of being deported if they come forward and tell the truth? And, you know, that's a high-profile kind of case, but obviously the same thing could happen in our local neighborhoods. I've heard a lot of our local elected officials and police officers say they're very worried in the case of undocumented people, or I guess even green card holders who maybe have been accused of a crime or committed one at some point, that they might be afraid to report, hey, you know, my neighbor's beating his wife, or I just saw somebody break into the house across the street, because they could be found to be undocumented or, you know, a green card holder who has a crime on their record, and then they could be deported for trying to do the right thing.
You know, you're so right. You make an excellent point, because at the end of the day, where I think this all sediments is discretion. But, there are many fallouts from this presidential order. But one of it is the community one that you're talking about. I mean, again, I don't support somebody being here illegally, and I don't support driving drunk or crimes. However, mm-hmm. They're still a human being. They're still a part of our society. They still, you know, get in the midst of everything. They do their thing. They report crimes. They help people. They do many, many good things, as people do. This is all going to go away. You're right. Because who wants to risk being deported when you're being a good Samaritan, or when you're doing the right thing?
So where do you draw the line? I guess, you know, to be devil's advocate for a moment, the sort of pro-deportation crowd isn't here with us right now. But, you know, they've looked at cases at the other extreme of the spectrum. I think there was a Sanctuary City case up in San Francisco where they were shielding somebody from deportation who'd committed multiple serious violent felonies, and they went out and injured or killed somebody again because they hadn't been deported. So do you think that there's a reasonable line that can be drawn between maybe deporting people who are a true danger to society versus protecting people who are not?
Well, yeah, I definitely do. I mean, the president has his heart in the right place, but, you know, the execution, or maybe that, you know, if this was a little bit more finely defined at this stage, even before the regulation stage, creates some problems. Because if you blankly, like, if you were to remove from America all American citizens with criminal records, you know how many people we'd lose?
A lot of them.
First of all. And secondly, who would take them? So.
Good point.
But at the end of the day, you know, because we create a lot of waivers, you know, we've represented some extremely high profile scientists, actors, movie producers. I mean, people make mistakes. It's the nature of who we are as human beings. We're going to make a mistake, and sometimes, sadly, that mistake crosses the boundaries of the law.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, and this is, again, unfortunately going to take some manpower, and I've got some ideas on how it could be done, but, again, the government does things their way.
I'm curious, are there any constitutional challenges here? For example, has anybody gone to court yet to challenge the legality of deporting somebody who's merely been accused of a crime for the first time and has never had their day in court? Obviously, sometimes people are found innocent by courts. DNA evidence may prove someone innocent. An eyewitness could have just got it wrong. You know, an assault could turn out to be self-defense. How can it be legal to just deport somebody who's a legal green card holder, a legal resident, when they haven't been convicted of anything yet?
Well, you know, we haven't gotten to the stage where somebody with enough money to challenge this has had themselves removed on that basis. Because at the end of the day, law does cost money.
Yeah.
And the more you spend, the better lawyer you get. I mean, it's for the most part.
I mean, would you file a challenge like that if you had the right client come along, somebody out there who's a rich CEO who gets told he can't come, you know, that he's getting deported because of something that he was accused of and not convicted of?
I would challenge this, absolutely, yeah. Because just being charged, for example, you know, there are oftentimes situations where a number of you are doing something. Let's say a bunch of college kids, toilet paper all over somebody's house.
Mm-hmm.
They'll charge everybody, and then it's your job to exculpate yourself. And if you're one of those people, you're out. Another one that I see I don't see it commonly in my practice, but I could see it commonly happening. When there are enough drugs in the car for two or more people, and there are two or more people, then they both get charged with possession for the purposes of trafficking. Now, that's a very serious offense. For example,
and you might not even know if you're catching a ride with somebody and they've got drugs.
Correct. Or even today, I don't have a marijuana card. I don't smoke marijuana. Mm-hmm. But let's say somebody does have a card and they have marijuana. Let's say they don't have a card and they have enough marijuana for both of us. I'm in big trouble.
I had that situation happen to me. I was had a photographer. We went through the checkpoint out here in Pine Valley. And coming back, the drug-sniffing dog was going nuts. And it turned out my photographer had a medical marijuana card, which he showed. And the agent, this was before the Trump order, probably be worse now, but the agent looked at him and said, well, if we find even one seed, you're busted, and it's a felony. It's not legal under federal law. And I was just getting chills. I thought, I'm just the driver. I had no idea, you know. And thankfully, they didn't find anything. The dog was just alerting on a bag the guy was carrying that used to have his medical marijuana in it. But what if they had, you know, a couple seeds and you can have a felony. And if you didn't even know it and you're the driver or a passenger in that vehicle and you're a green card holder, you're toast, basically.
Well, especially here, like you're talking about the border. Yeah, that's considered a border. That's
a
problem.
Yeah, so you drive through the checkpoints, folks, even the ones inside the U.S., you know, and you've got a buddy that's a medical marijuana user, you make them shake the bags out and leave that stuff at home.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Especially if, you know, and some of these medical marijuana users, they have a lot more than they need. And that's where the person beside them could get charged because they're thinking, mm-hmm. why do you have all of this marijuana?
Yeah,
even
exactly.
if you've got a card.
Yeah, the laws are crazy. So I guess, you know, in wrapping this up, what advice would you give to people who are green card holders or Visa card holders right now? Can you sum it up for those who are legal residents in those categories in the United States about what they need to know and what they should do to protect themselves from being, or at least minimize the chance that they would be deported if they're not a serious, you know, felon?
Absolutely. If they have any kind of a crime, find out from an immigration lawyer if you qualify for a waiver, W-A-I-V-E-R, it's called a waiver, so that you can do something about this. Because if you're just sitting here, it's a matter of time before they get you. They're not stupid. They're very good at what they do.
Yeah.
They will catch you.
And
I wouldn't travel.
Is there a rule of who can qualify for the waiver and who can't? Or is that still nebulous?
Oh, no, not at all. Under Section 212, the rules are laid out and the Code of Federal Regulations lays out who qualifies, who doesn't qualify, under what grounds, what they need to show.
Okay.
So it's very well laid out. Waivers have been going on for a long time. And the other thing I would certainly say, absolutely, don't leave the country.
And that includes, we should add, even if you've been accused of a crime and not convicted.
Oh, absolutely. Because
you're
considered in the same category. And even if it's a $5 shoplifting offense that you don't think anything about, or if you're from Canada, you're expunged there, it doesn't count here. If you're expunged here, it doesn't count anyway.
Wow.
So think twice about this, but really be careful, because this is the law that's getting everybody. Everybody's looking up at the sky while the reptile is coming in and getting them at the ankles.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I really want to thank you for joining us today. If people want to get more information about this, Mr. Resnick, do you have a website or a source that you
can
refer
to? Yes, I do, and I have a number of articles that I've written about this law, and it's myimmigrationattorney.com. And they can read the articles. There's some articles there on waivers. There's videos for them to see on immigration so they can do it right. Absolutely. Thank you.
Listeners, if you just tuned in, we've been speaking with Stephen Resnick, with San Diego Biz Law, an immigration lawyer, about some of the little-known provisions of Presidential Order 13768 that you should know if you are a green card holder or visa holder here in the United States. Thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you so much, Miriam. It's been such a pleasure.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes the Lilac Festival, an extreme hiking challenge, live music at local wineries, and a street fair with carnival rides.
Plus, we'll tell you about coming attractions, including Julian Gold Rush Days, Sweet Pea Day, A Taste of Julian, a harp concert, a harmonica festival, and Easter events, including an extravaganza at Santee Lakes and a bunny train ride at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum in Campo.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many others.
Fort Cross Old-Timey Adventures in Santa Isabel invites you to savor springtime at a lilac festival on March 25th and 26th. Stroll through organic, sweet-smelling lilac groves in the mountains near Julian, or hop on a hayride to enjoy views on a scenic nature loop. Plus, you'll find an array of unusual activities reflecting the community's rich pioneer heritage. Jesse Cross, dance caller and music man, will play live music and lead any willing participants through square dancing and Hootenanny dance steps. Listen to a lively hoedown or pick up an instrument. You can also try your skill at tomahawk throwing, visit a petting zoo, get your face painted, make a fairy garden, paint a flower vase to keep, and dip your own lilac-themed candle the old-fashioned way. Potted lilacs and fragrant lilac stems will be available for purchase. For full details on the Lilac Festival, you can visit fortcross.com.
Are you up for a rugged climb? You're invited to participate in an extreme hiking challenge at El Capitan and Lakeside, one of the most difficult trails locally, on March 25th from noon to 7 p.m. You can hike all or part of the trail with the ranger. Bring a gallon of water and snacks, wear sturdy shoes, a hat, and sunscreen for this tough 12-mile hike to the top of El Cajon Mountain, also known as El Cap, where you'll find spectacular panoramic views. The trail includes several thousand feet of elevation, gain and loss, with some steep and slippery sections. Please RSVP by calling 619-561-0580.
Jim Earp, a fingerstyle guitarist, will perform original material in a Hawaiian slat key meets Celtic guitar vein on Saturday, March 25th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the San Pasquale Winery Tasting Room in La Mesa's downtown village. He will also sing a host of songs from The Police to 70s folk rock, Alla Neil Young, and James Taylor. For details, visit sanpasqualewinery.com.
The Catherine Cloward Band will present a live musical performance at Wineworks in La Mesa on Saturday, March 25th from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. Wineworks is located at 8167 Center Street in La Mesa. For more information, visit lamesawineworks.com.
On Sunday, March 26th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., the 21st Annual Rolando Street Fair will be held on Rolando Boulevard, south of El Cajon Boulevard. The event includes over 130 vendors with handcrafts, food, carnival rides, and kids' activities. Live music bands will include Len Rainey and the Midnight Players, Trey Tosh and the band called Life, The Routine, Paul Cannon, Iron Sagewood, and Cassidy and the Music. Nearly 15,000 people attend this family-friendly event each year. Now for a preview of coming attractions.
Julian Gold Rush Days celebrates the discovery of gold in this mountain community and invites visitors to learn more about its history with a weekend of entertainment, including gold panning, tomahawk throwing, candle dipping, and more on April 1st and 2nd. Located at the Julian Mining Company in Winola, the old-fashioned mining camp will offer reenactors, an arts and crafts market, food and drink, petting zoo, pony rides, and plenty of family fun. For more information, visit juliangoldrushdays.com.
The San Diego Harp Society will present this annual concert featuring young local harp players at the Mission Trails Regional Parks Visitor Center on Sunday, April 2nd at 3 p.m. Seating is first come, first served. For more information, visit mtrp.org.
Every year on the first Saturday of April, the Anza Borrego Desert State Park attracts storytellers from all over the globe to compete in the annual Peg Leg Smith Liars Contest. This year's event will be held on April 4th. Thomas L. Smith, better known as Peg Leg Smith, in the 1800s was a mountain man, prospector, and spinner of tall tales. Legends regarding his lost gold mine have grown through the years, and countless people have searched the desert for its fabulous wealth. The mine could be within a few miles of the monument. All comers are welcome to enter the contest. Sign up is on the arrival at the contest site, which is held at the Peg Leg Smith Memorial, about 7 miles east of Borrego Springs along Route S-22. Specifically, the storytelling contest takes place on Henderson Canyon Road, 1,000 feet north of Peg Leg Road. Presentations are done in order of sign-up. Stories should be no more than 5 minutes in length, another little joke. Tall tales should be about the lost gold and or Peg Leg Smith. Costumes and other original touches are always appreciated by the crowd and judges. For more information on this annual contest, visit peglegsmith at desert.com.
Lemon Grove Historical Society's next History Alive event will present three members of the Chosen Few, veterans from the Battle of Chosen during the Korean War, a 17-day battle fought in sub-zero weather against all odds. You can hear their stories and see artifacts from the battlefield on April 6th at 7 p.m. in the H. Lee House Cultural Center, 3207 Olive, Lemon Grove. For more information, you can call 619-460-4353.
It's Sweet Pea Day at Summers Pass Farms in Flynn Springs on Saturday, April 8th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. You can cut your own bouquet starting at 11 a.m. until the beautiful blooms are gone. You're invited to weave through a towering sweet pea maze in full glory. You can also picnic on a grassy area or enjoy live music in the coffee bar's shady pavilion while savoring springtime in East County. For details and directions, visit summerspassfarms.com.
The Hamul Kiwanis Club is revving up for its 9th annual Hot Rod and Chili Cook-Off on April 8th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Pio Pico Thousand Trails in Hamul. Guests can savor chili cooking, check out classic hot rods, cool off in a beer garden, or vie for prizes in drawings and a silent auction. For more information, you can visit hamulkiwanis.org.
The 9th annual Taste of Julian will be held on April 8th, serving up a rural dining adventure. Taste of Julian is a self-guided culinary tour of unique restaurants, wineries, and breweries. For tickets and details, visit julian.com.
Looking for a new way to celebrate the Easter holiday with your family? Hop aboard the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum's Bunny Train, complete with a train ride, a visit from the Easter Bunny, and an Easter egg hunt as you travel through our beautiful back country. Bunny train rides are available on April 8th, 9th, and 10th with several departure times. You can purchase tickets at the Campo Depot. For details, visit the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum at psrm.org.
The City of Santee and Santee Lakes present the 14th Annual Spring Extravaganza at Santee Lakes Recreation on Saturday, April 15th from 9 to 3 p.m. at Lake No. 5. Kids of all ages can enjoy a variety of games and activities, including carnival rides, pony rides, a petting zoo, inflatable jumps, spring crafts, and live entertainment by Prince Primo DJ. Egg hunts run continuously during the event on Egg Hunt Island for children ages 4 through 8 and in the Egg Hunt Basket for those ages 3 and under. Parents, please be sure and bring a child's basket for all those eggs. Food will be available on site, or families are welcome to bring a picnic of their own to enjoy at the park. For details, visit SanteeLakes.com.
The 18th Annual Spring Harp Fest, showcasing harmonica players' musical jam fests, will be held on Saturday, April 15th from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. at Harry Griffin Park in La Mesa. Donations from this event are used to purchase harmonicas for local schools. Get the lineup of talent scheduled at springharpfest.org.
That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County. See you around, East County.
On Saturday night, Hewlett High Varsity Boys Basketball faced Emmanuel High School from Reedley, California. The Eagles sported a 23-8 overall season record and an 8-2 league record and are the Central Section champions. Emmanuel at first proved to be an even tougher opponent than Carson. They were aggressive defensively, almost outplaying the Highlanders, but Hewlett made up for it with their high-powered offense, led by senior Jalen Arnold. The Scotty Dogs kept drawing fouls to increase their point total and ended the first quarter up 21-11. Hewlett's junior bench took control in the second quarter. Miles Norris, Jalen Hinson, and Carson Baker took turns absolutely demoralizing the Eagles. The Eagles crept back a little bit and Hewlett went to the locker room up 33-29. The Highlanders were plagued by mistakes in the third quarter. The Eagles took advantage of the Scotties' foul trouble and tied the game and eventually took the lead. The defensive aggressiveness that they had shown in the early first quarter returned. The shots that Hewlett could usually get to fall stopped falling. Norris eventually tied the game and got Hewlett their lead back, but not by much. The Highlanders led 51-50 after three. The Highlanders got their groove back in the fourth quarter with fast breaks. Though they had to play keep away from the Eagles for much of the period, senior Dylan Lee came through in the clutch again with two big points in the paint and a three-pointer, skyrocketing the Highlanders to a double-digit lead once more. Hewlett punched their ticket to Sacramento with a hard-fought 80-69 win over Emmanuel. Hewlett will face St. Patrick St. Vincent High School from Vallejo, California in the Division IV Boys Basketball State Final tomorrow in Sacramento at noon.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.